This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
And we are not experts.
But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And before we get into it, a reminder that all the products we mention are always on our website, forever35podcast.com. We have a voicemail, 781-591-0390, where you can leave us messages that we might play on the show. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
And we have a very active Facebook group and community, and you can find out all about that on facebook.com/groups/forever35podcast. The password to join the group is serums. There are so many spinoffs. It's the place to be.
It is indeed the place to be.
Be there or be square, everybody.
And if you like the show, we sure do appreciate a review, a rating on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend. That's always welcome as well.
And we're on Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast and on Twitter at Forever 35 Pod.
Whew. Whew. Mm. There we go. Kate.
Greetings.
I love what you wrote here.
You do?
In our little prep document. You said, okay. I've gone all in on my sleep hygiene. Those words are music to my ears.
Well, you know, I wrote this document before I went to bed last night. And then last night was just in party with me and insomnia, just a sexy dance between the two of us. But it was okay. I figured it out. I worked through it. I would say insomnia is probably not the, well, maybe it is the right term, but just... I have had a really hard time falling asleep. I could not do it last night. I did all my little things that I tried, but then finally, and I've mentioned this on a recent episode of Here For You, but I gotta mention it again. A listener recommended something called Good Day Chocolate Sleep Supplement. Candy coated pieces with 1 milligram of melatonin per piece. Now, I got some in a grocery order. Mm-hmm. I should tell you, Dori.
Yes.
I ordered it. I had done like a Whole Foods pickup order.
Okay.
And I put this on my list thinking it would be like a big bottle of vitamins. It is 8 pieces of.
Oh my gosh.
It's so tiny. It's literally like the size of like a little cardboard box, the size of an eraser that you get in elementary school. It's very small.
Wow.
There are 8 pieces of chocolate, and I had 2 of them last night. So like, you know. Whoops. And I just dropped one on my desk. So just FYI, I don't know. I need to do a little more research on it if I can acquire more. But they are basically giant chocolatey M&M-like candies that have melatonin in them. And at 1:30 last night, I took 2 of them, and that did help me transition into sleeping.
Okay. Do you know why you weren't able to fall asleep last night?
Okay. As I confessed to you... already pre-recording, I was doing the thing where I looked at my phone late.
Yeah.
And I regret it. I deeply regret it. So let me may I fill listeners in on kind of just what I'm,
please.
The steps I am taking?
Yes, please. I would like nothing more.
We have talked about sleep hygiene a lot on Forever 35, and I have always found it to be a struggle, and I've had sleep issues in the past, and they go hand in hand with my anxiety. So it's pretty clear to me that this is pandemic related insomnia and stress. Like I know what it is, and I do feel very fortunate that, like, while I do have to wake up and work and take care of my family, it's not like I have to wake up and be at an office at 8 o'clock. So, because when I used to get this kind of sleep insomnia, I'd have to be at work at 8, and it would be this kind of like all night panic about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is very lucky for me. I feel like right now that does help, but I'm trying to figure out ways in which to not trigger this kind of bedtime sleep anxiety. So the one thing I need to do that I think really helps is get off my phone about an hour before I plan on falling asleep.
Okay.
And that is hard for me, Dory, because like when I go to wash my face, I bring my phone.
Okay.
Do you do this? Do you do that?
No, I put my phone away before I start my whole bedtime routine.
I mean, my brain, it's like, I want to be looking at Facebook while I'm washing my face. Like that's...
So what I do, here's what I do. And like, you're welcome to do this or not do this. I don't care. Like if I'm doing something in the living room, like say watching TV, I will finish watching TV. I'll take like one last look at my phone, and then I'll plug my phone in the kitchen. And then like, I'm done with the phone for the night.
Ooh.
And I go into my bedroom, I change into my pajamas, or maybe I'm already in my pajamas. I do my whole, you know, wash my face, put on my serums, my lotions, I brush my teeth, floss, etc. I do my yoga toes, I write in my journal. I'll usually read on my Kindle for a little bit. Last night, I was on my iPad looking for something that I will talk about in a little bit. But I try to stay off my iPad, because then it's like tempting to look at news websites, and I don't want to be doing that. And then I usually get so tired. I often fall asleep while reading.
Yeah. That sounds
like,
amazing.
Like lights on, Kindle in hand, and then I'll like jerk up. I'll be like, okay. And then I'll like put the Kindle away, turn out the light, and like really go to sleep.
I feel like that's how you know that you've hit middle age, because I do that too. And I feel like that I would watch my parents do that and be like, they are so weird. Like I'd go peek in their bedroom and they'd both be like asleep with the lights on with books on their chest.
Yeah, totally.
You know? But like now we're there and it feels good. And like you get why you just kind of like close your eyes mid book.
Yes. Yes.
I've had that experience in my better sleep days. And I really admire that you are so consistent with that. Not just that it works for you, but that like you, so much of it is forming the habit.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. And you've done that. And you've done that as long as this podcast has been in existence, even before, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, as discussed on this podcast, I have had to be consistent because of my sleep disorder. And even though I still get night terrors, having a consistent sleep routine does help. So.
Did you talk to anyone? Like, did someone guide you through figuring out a sleep routine in terms of dealing with your sleep disorder, or
there's
is this just
lot,
kind of something?
There's a lot of articles about it that I consulted. It's also partly why, like, and Matt and I are at odds about this. I like to have my bedroom be a cave. Like, I like it pitch dark, preferably like blackout curtains, no light getting in, quiet as a tomb. And he likes to, like, he likes to wake up with the natural light.
Ooh!
Which means that there's, like, light seepage all the time.
Light seepage!
And that's often been a source of conflict. But, like, ultimately, I think the person with the sleep disorder wins out.
Amen.
But yeah, like some of the, and I, like I've talked about this before, but like going to sleep at a consistent time every night is also very important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having that wind down period is important. Earplugs, eye mask. Like,
do you do earplugs at night?
I do.
Okay. Okay. Do you have a certain brand of earplug that you like, or is it just kind of like a generic drugstore earplug?
It's a generic drugstore earplug. I believe the ones I have right now are from Walgreens.
Great. Shout out to Walgreens.
Shout out to Walgreens.
I don't know. I like a very loud white noise at
yeah.
night.
Yes.
And I love the variety of white noise machines I have cranking up all over my house. I have been finding melatonin to be very useful. Mm-hmm. And as well as reading and journaling at night, that does really kind of help me wind down. It's the transition from phone to non-phone that has been really hard. And maybe I need to move my phone out of the bedroom completely. I've been leaving it on my desk, which is in my bedroom. And as you mentioned, you like when we were talking about this previously, you were like, I think work needs to be kept out of the bedroom. But right now my workspace is literally 24 inches from my bed.
That's very like, hard.
Right now I'm sitting at my desk and I can reach behind me and touch my bed. So That is a little tricky. Like I will look at my computer and I'll think of something I haven't done like for the podcast and I'll be like, oh, I'll just do this one and I'll like flip it open mm-hmm. and do it. So that's hard for me too. So I need to kind of start figuring that out. But I will say I have been wearing an eye mask a lot more. And not only is it helpful in filtering the light, there's something about like the pressure of it that is comforting.
Mm.
Do you experience that? Like the just
that's
like the tender caress of an eye pillow against my face, I'm finding very soothing.
That's very interesting.
Did you ever solve your eye pillow conundrum, Dory?
So I'm going to talk about this on a later episode.
Okay. So pause this topic.
I have gone back to wearing an eye mask.
Okay, I have one that I've been wearing for a while, but I just ordered a new one from Lunia.
I have been eyeing the Lunia one. It is so very pretty.
It's pretty. My best friend uses it and loves it. So I finally got it because the one I currently have is like, there's a little seepage. Seepage is a word I now want to say every 2 seconds. Seepage.
I mean, I don't know if that's like an official word, but it like makes sense, right?
Yeah, there's seepage.
There's
like, you
seepage.
Don't want...
There's seepage.
Oh my God, what a word. I've never said that word more than like once in my life. Seepage. Yes. I will also say, like, in terms of kind of self-care practices, also with sleep, keeping my space clean, like my bedroom, helps me feel like soothed in it.
Yes.
And I'm very messy, and so... It is very hard for me to keep my space clean. Like,
yes.
Currently I'm looking at yet another basket of laundry and a pile of books. And
uh-huh.
So I do think that does help you feel like your space is calm.
Kate, it's funny you mentioned that because I was going to touch on this later in the episode in our intenties zone.
Yes.
But yes, I agree with you. I will touch on this later. I'm not going to touch on it now.
Well, I do want to mention, Dory, and then I will shut my pie hole.
seed the floor, as it were.
Yes, I have been listening to Marissa Meltzer's new book, This Is Big.
I am dying to read this book.
I am
dying.
Loving it. I sent her a rando Instagram DM. We do not know each other, nor... have we ever communicated? And I was like, I'm loving your book. I'm loving it. I'm listening to the audiobook because it is part memoir about her own experiences with disordered eating and body image and dieting and body dysmorphia and self-esteem. And so it kind of flips back and forth between her own reflection on her relationship to dieting and then a fascinating biography of Jean Nidich, who founded Weight Watchers.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very personally fraught relationship with Weight Watchers myself. And so it is just incredible. I'm absolutely loving it. I'm loving the audiobook. I wanted to just give it a big recommendation. And she's also a past guest on G Thanks Just Bought It, the podcast
yes.
we produce, hosted by Caroline Moss. And that's just a great episode. So if you want
you want to taste.
I would recommend that episode. But Dory, it's a really great book. It's great. And I feel very seen. It also, like, because she's about our age, she reflects, like, her experiences dieting as a teen is coming up in the world of, like, the non-fat 90s that we've talked about before.
Yes,
of, like,
yes, yes.
Snackwells and wells. Diarrhea potato chips and everything mm-hmm. else. And so it's, you know, that part is also very, I feel very, I see my past self in it a lot. And it's an intense read, but it's really lovely.
Yeah, I think she and I are almost exactly the same age. So yes, like a lot of that resonates for sure.
Yeah, recommend. Anyway, my friend.
Yes.
Take me into your life. We have not seen each other in over 2 months. IRL.
I know.
I saw you on a Zoom the other day. Your hair is long and luxurious.
So is yours, my friend.
That's true. We both have manes.
We do. We really do.
So what have you been doing this week in terms of your self-care realm?
Well, Kate, I bought 2 11-peg acrylic necklace wall racks from the Container Store. They are currently on sale for $8.24. The regular price is $10.99. They are life-changing. Just going to put it out there. Here's my issue. I have some really good wall space in my bathroom / changing area, but not a ton of counter space. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really unpacked my jewelry, which I should also just say is like mostly costume jewelry. I don't have fancy jewelry, but like I didn't have anywhere to put my Madewell necklaces. And I found these wall racks at the Container Store and they're awesome. So if you're looking for a good way to store jewelry or really like anything else small that needs to be hung, these are what you want. And I can't wear earrings. So all of my jewelry is hanging jewelry because it's necklaces, Wait, bracelets, and rings.
Why can't you wear earrings? Are you allergic to earrings?
Yes.
Are you,
so,
do you have your ears pierced?
Have I never told you this story?
I don't think so. I'm trying to rack my brain to see if I know what you're, why not, but I don't know if I do.
Kate, picture it. It's the early 90s.
Okay, I'm there.
Everyone cool has multiple ear piercings.
Of course we do.
I wanted to go for 3 holes in my left ear and 2 in my right. That was what I was working up to.
Did you have any at this point of the story?
Yes. So I got my ears pierced for the first time in, I think it was the summer after 5th grade. So I was 11. And I had a traumatic experience then because I got these really small gold balls and one of them went into my ear. So I had to get it, like my friend's mom, who was a nurse, had to like come over and like yank it out of my ear. And so that was kind of traumatic, but like it healed. Everything was fine. And then like 3 or 4 years later, I got the second holes in both ears. So now I have two holes in both ears working up to the third. And that's when like all hell broke loose and my ears got everything got so infected. I was at summer camp. I was at sleepaway camp. I had to go they had to take me to a doctor, like off camp, an off camp doctor.
Oh, you know, stuff is real when you have to go to an off camp doctor.
So I had to go on antibiotics. Like it was just like an infected mess. And the doctor was like, you really should not be wearing earrings.
Whoa.
So I let my holes close up.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And you've never worn earrings since?
I have not.
Do you ever wear like a clip-on?
Yeah. Mhm. Clip-ons are not the best. Like they kind of hurt.
Yeah, that's what my grandmother wore and then she would like give me her rejects and when I was a child and they did not feel good.
No, they either like
constant pinching.
Yeah, they either fall off or they're really pinching you because they stay on. And like you can't get any of like the cool like delicate little bars that people wear or mm-hmm. you know little hoops mm-hmm. like those don't come in clip on. So
no, it's like giant big flowers.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I don't know. I would love to be able to wear earrings. I think earrings are so pretty. but I've just sort of accepted my lot in life. You know,
I have. I mean, to be fair, I have never, never even noticed whether or not you have earrings on. Like, I don't even. Yeah, I've never studied your lobes.
So anyway, so I don't have earrings. So earring storage is not a concern for me.
That's fair. You know what? You're saving yourself a lot of grief over storing. Like, I just dump things all over the place. I don't even have a good storage system. So good work.
Well, thank you so much. So now I'm looking for the perfect hanging wall, shelf, wall unit for some makeup and skincare products, because right now I have them in organizers on my countertop, but it's like, it's kind of disorganized and I just need more space. So I'm scoping some stuff out, and I'll link to the one that the best one for my purposes seems to be only available on Amazon. It's $25 for a 2-pack of these like small acrylic shelves. So I'll link to those too.
I am intrigued. And you know, I would love to circle back to like a prod storage convo, because I have not, you know, I had like a spinning unit at one point. If you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you might recall that, but I had to toss that. I don't have a system. So it's overflow.
Yeah, there's a lot of overflow. I have a small spinny thing that I keep some prods in, but not everything. Like, I think I keep most of my lipsticks in the small spinny thing.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Also, before we take a short break, someone who I assume is a listener, actually, I don't actually know, now that I think about it, I don't actually know if she's a listener. When I was doing my paint by numbers of the desert scene, I don't know if you recall that a couple weeks ago.
Of course I do.
Okay. I was chronicling my progress on Instagram, and a listener DM'd me and said that I should, when I do another one, I should auction it off for charity. And I was thinking, like, I could do an auction, but maybe it would be better to do like a giveaway where you have to like donate $5. Like, if you donate $5 to this, to whatever charity I choose, then you get an entry. I don't know. Is that something people would want?
This is for a work of art painted by you.
Correct. And what it would be is a picture. It's a painting of RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh, I'm going to enter.
That is my next paint by numbers project. All right. Well, if you'll enter, then I know I have at least one entry. So I think
I will enter.
I think I'm going to do it.
Yeah. If you paint a picture of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I will make a donation to enter to win it.
Great. Fabulous. Done.
What is the organization that you will be supporting? Do you know yet?
So I was thinking maybe the Downtown Women's Center here in Los Angeles.
Love. Yeah, they're great.
They're just like a great organization. I've personally donated money to them before. They called me the other day to like check in and tell me about like how they were dealing with COVID stuff. And I just think they're like a really great organization, and they don't just like serve meals or, you know, give clothes. Like, they're really kind of a full service organization that helps women like get jobs and do all kinds of things. So I know it's a local thing, so maybe someone in like Boston is like, well, who cares about Los Angeles? But hey, you know what? I care.
Yeah,
I live
care
here.
Too. And we love here. We love this city.
We do. We do. All right, cool. Well, you know, it sounds like you're on board, so I'll do this.
I'm on board. I'm ready to enter, so great. Sign me up. How big is the painting? I just need to know where I'm going to put it.
I think it's 8.5 by 11. It's pretty small.
Cute. Okay.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay.
Great.
Great. Done.
Done and done.
And one more thing before we take a break. We are changing things up over here schedule wise. We already talked about this on Here For You, but we want to mention it on the main show as well. We are going to be stopping Here For You as a separate pod as of next Friday, May 29th. That will be the last episode. And after that, we are going to add an episode to Forever 35. So there will be one kind of full length episode, exactly the same as what we do now. That's the one you're listening to. And then we're going to do two mini episodes that are a little more here for you style. And those will be on Mondays and Fridays, and the full length episodes will be on Wednesdays. So just look out for that coming up.
Can't wait. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I am too. I think it'll be fun. All right. Well, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Lin Chen, who is an amazing filmmaker, writer, actor, director,
voiceover artist.
She a blogger. She does it all.
She's the coolest.
She's so cool. All right. Be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave, it's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like, zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word. Don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Our guest today is Lin Chen. Lin, welcome to Forever 35.
Thank you. This is beyond exciting for me. I am OG fan, have been listening since the beginning, every single episode, super fan, super excited.
Well, yay. That's a real honor, so thank you.
Thank you.
Lin, I'm going to start by reading a lovely bio all about you. Lin Chen is making her filmmaking debut with I Will Make You Mine, a feature film which she wrote, produced, directed, and stars in. And we'll talk about this because the movie does it still count? It was making its world premiere at the 2020 South by Southwest Film Festival, but because of coronavirus, that has been put on hold. But we'll get to that. She is best known as an actor with credits in over 50 television shows, films, audiobooks, and video games. Lynn has hosted non-scripted content for outlets like BuzzFeed, TasteMade, Hello Giggles that have seen over 40 million views. She created the blog and podcast The Actor's Diet and Thick Dumpling Skin, which has won numerous awards, including the blog Her Voices of the Year and the Editor's Choice for CBS LA's Most Valuable Blogger. And Lynn has also been a spokesperson for the National Eating Disorders Association, has worked with Time's Up and with the National Organization of Women, and has spoken at Disneyland California, Food and Wine, WonderCon, Stanford, Dartmouth, and Wellesley College. Lynn.
Yes.
I realized we intro'd you talking about your film that was set to premiere at South by Southwest, and that changed because of the coronavirus pandemic. Can you kind of first give us a background on what's going on, and then can you tell us about this movie, which has been such a massive part of your life?
Yeah. I feel like South by Southwest was like the first, at least for those of us in Los Angeles, especially those in the entertainment industry, the first thing to happen to really make everyone sort of take this seriously. I feel like we were hit first about like a week before everything just started to fall apart. And when it happened, it was shocking and very disappointing, considering I had been working on this movie for the last 2 years, and that was supposed to be the world premiere. And it was just very disappointing. But that said, there's a lot of good that's come out of it. First of all, I feel really lucky that my movie will still be seen. We signed a distribution deal with Gravitas Ventures before the film festival, which is pretty rare. And so we still will be seen by an audience in May. On May 26th is the date it comes out on video on demand and cable on demand and DVD. But it won't have a big screen premiere. And the movie is like very much, it's like a music movie. It's shot in black and white. It's like very cinematic because we filmed it on anamorphic lenses, and it feels like feels very sad that we don't get that audience participation. But it's the way of the world, and I feel like because we sort of were hit with it first, I had like a week to mourn what was going on, and then just really see the seriousness of the state of the world, and then just didn't feel personal. I just felt lucky.
Yeah, the movie is beautiful in so many ways. And when you say it is cinematic, it really is cinematic. I mean, I watched it on my computer and I was like, I wish I was watching this in a movie theater. But yes, it's wonderful that people will still get to see it. And I was kind of wondering about that grieving process, if you could talk about it a little bit, how you sort of dealt with this huge disappointment of the movie not premiering when you thought it would.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, it is like a grieving process, and I feel like I've dealt with two major griefs or losses in my life. Both of them that I touch upon a little bit in the movie, but the first one was that I had wanted to have kids and couldn't. And it was like 3 years of trying, and finally the decision, instead of deciding to do IVF, we just decided not to have children. And so there was the grief of the identity that mm-hmm. I had for myself. Growing up, I always thought I was going to be a mom, and being with my husband, Abe, who I've been with for 23 years now, like we just always thought we would be parents. So it was shifting that, that view that I thought was going to happen for myself. So that was like one of the number one, mornings that I had, which took years to finally get over, not even get over, but move on from fully. Yeah. And then the second one was the death of my father, and which happened in 2012. And You know, a lot of the movie is, the movie's dedicated to my father, and there's a whole storyline about a father's death in it. Mm-hmm. And my father is the reason this movie got made. We used his, half of the budget was, you know, used from money that had been from his savings that my mom generously said, you know, you should have this. So, I honestly think that you guys and your audience will understand and not think I'm crazy when I tell you that part of what helped me get over all of this was on like day three of when I found out, after we found out South By had been canceled, and I was just sort of sitting in the car, like about to get ice cream, really just feeling it. The reality of everything, I get a text message from my sister-in-law in New Jersey, and she says, "Hi, just went to go see a psychic medium, and your father showed up, and he knew about your movie, and he knew it was about him, and he knows you got balayage."
Oh my God. I got the last part.
And I was like, excuse me? My sister-in-law is a nurse in New Jersey. She works in like a COVID unit. She's got like very serious problems that she wants to talk about with the psychic that she went to go see. And my father pushed his way through and demanded to talk about me because he, I guess, knew that I was really suffering. So, yeah, so the psychic in New Jersey, who apparently helps solve crimes with the New Jersey police, of course I got her number. Of course I called her the next day. And of course the reading was like not so great in terms of like I wanted like more like, you know, miracles from heaven pouring down, yeah, like knowledge bombs dropped. But instead what I got was like the same lecture my father's given me my entire life, which is so annoying to hear. You have to work hard. Don't give up. Don't let other people put you down. Be patient. Like, it's just going to get harder. And I was like, this is horrible. But at the same time, yeah, there was something very, I don't know. I guess in that moment just made me see the bigger picture of it all and trust that, like, that it wasn't so, like, it still felt very personal at the time, and that it, there was a lot more at stake here than just like me and my movie. And, and like, you know, that he's like, he had literally moved heaven and earth to tell me this. So, I don't know, that helped immensely.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I'm married to somebody who's pretty skeptical about this stuff. And he was like literally sitting next to me in the car while I'm like getting this text and talking to my sister-in-law. And he's just like, whatever helps you get through this.
Can I wow, ask you a question about grief? Because you mentioned two really massive things, which is grieving the loss of an identity you thought you would have and a life you thought you would have. And then also the loss of a parent. And I'm wondering, through those two experiences, were there practices, self-care practices that you used to help yourself cope and move forward?
Yes. Yes. Which is why I'm obsessed with your podcast, because I am nothing but, I guess, I don't even know if it's self-care, but just like the way I really watch how I talk to myself. Like you said in my bio, I am a spokesperson for the National Eating Disorders Association, and something that I struggled with for a long time was eating disorder, specifically binge eating, and it was something that was very deep rooted in just not being kind to myself and living with a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and a lot of like, why me? And feeling cursed. And I feel like when I started to consciously shift that narrative, and not only just, you know, and it wasn't even just about like standing in front of the mirror and saying nice things to myself, because that really didn't work for me. But it was more just adding things into my life that gave me immense pleasure, like facials, like massages, like clothes, like material things, taking myself on walks, going to see a shrink, taking myself to a movie in the middle of the day, eating popcorn for breakfast, eating ice cream for dinner. You know, like all of these things added up to a new way of thinking about myself and my life and how I deal with things. So, you know, as much as it feels luxuriating to allow yourself to really enjoy these things and pamper yourself, I also really allow myself to feel the pain, because like I feel like you can't get through it unless you actually feel it and experience it. So a lot of being able to handle that you have to like surround it, or you know, it's like fluffing up a bunch of pillows so that you can settle into it a little more easily, because you know you're going to have to deal with it anyway.
I love that description.
Yeah, same.
Fluffing up a bunch of pillows. That's such a like a delightfully gentle way of talking about something that's really hard.
I wanted to ask about your eating disorder. I guess I just wanted to ask about that. I've read that you have said that there are kind of unique pressures for first generation Asian Americans when it comes to food. So can you talk a little bit about that? What do you mean by that exactly?
Yeah, when I was in college, I was a women's studies and music double major. And when I was a women's studies major, we studied eating disorders. And I remember at the time, binge eating wasn't considered an eating disorder. It was just anorexia and bulimia. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, this is not a problem for me. This is a white woman's problem. And it just like never occurred to me that the fact that I was like overeating constantly when I was happy, when I was sad, emotionally eating like that was just like normal to me. It wasn't until like I went home and I was studying eating disorders, and my family members would say to me things that they've always said to me, like, you've gained weight, but you have to eat all this food. Like Asian, I feel like in general, in Asian cultures, there's this big emphasis on food as it is in many cultures, but there's also this inability to really talk about the things that are going on in our lives, like actual things. It's almost always not about how you feel or even what you do, but more along the lines of like, this is what's happening right now as we speak. And so because of that, I wanted to like when my aunt would tell me that I got fat, to spite them, I'd be like, you're going to give me an eating disorder and I'm going to eat everything now. That'll show you. And I think in general, I think because Asian Americans, especially if their parents are immigrants, they want to please their parents through food. Like that's the language of love. And also there's no barrier when it comes to telling people about how they look. You've gained weight, you've lost weight. It's not even just like immigrant parents. It's like sometimes I'll be interviewed by a journalist who's Asian American and they have no problems just telling me about how I've gained or lost weight. Wow. And it's just like I just feel like it's something that's really embedded in the culture. And and then there's also the piece of not wanting to speak to quote unquote strangers, which is what my mom always called it when I went to therapy. She was just like, why do you have to tell your problems to strangers? You can talk to me about this, but she obviously doesn't want to hear it. So it's also like, there's also the concept of saving face, of like not wanting to bring shame upon the family. So like, if it sounds like you're having problems with your eating and a lot of them are stemming from, you know, societal and familial pressures, then like your family is worried that you're going to like talk shit about them and tell the world that like they haven't raised you right, basically.
Ooh, that's a lot.
It is a lot. And I feel like You know, I used to have this site called Thick Dumpling Skin that was specifically for Asian Americans dealing with eating disorders. And it was a lot of the same thing. You know, it was a lot of people, mostly women, who felt as though they, you know, they had to live up to the stereotype that we see, because there's not many images of Asian women still. It's getting better, but it's not great. And almost everyone is, you know, teeny tiny. And then you have like, then you have other stereotypes about Asian women, like that they can eat whatever they want. You know, like a lot of the competitive eaters, like the Black Widow. I don't know if you've heard of her, but like that they're these teeny tiny Asian women and they'll just like pound all this food and still stay tiny. And, you know, cause we all do karate or whatever. And that expectation to live up to that, is just, it's impossible and it feels really difficult. And I almost think that, in some cases, from what I've heard in other countries, like eating disorders are just kind of a way of life. They're not even seen as disordered the same way that like binge eating wasn't considered an eating disorder until, you know, like the last decade.
Mm. Wow. I also wanted to ask how working in Hollywood has affected your body image and kind of where you are now with it.
You know, when I had a blog where I posted everything I ate and I had it for 10 years, it came out of a place where my manager and my agent dropped me both on the same exact day. And it was a moment for me. This is also when I was trying to get pregnant. So it was a moment for me where I was like, I know I could get another manager and agent, but I just like don't want to. I want to see what it's like if I was to try to, if I was just try to be a human being that wasn't like feeling the pressure of having to look a certain way, and what would that look like? And also, what would it look like if like I didn't want to get pregnant and then use that as my excuse to like go whole hog on some food, you know? Like I wanted to have that relationship with food beforehand. I knew I didn't want to like pass along any of my insecurities to my kid and have them be the reason why like I was like finally enjoying myself and then have, I don't know, society or whatever be the reason why I like felt like I needed to lose all this weight. I wanted to be cool with my body before that. So during that time when I started to have my blog, that was really when I started to not only examine how I was eating and why I was eating and how it made me feel, both emotionally and physically, but I started talking to many people about it because, you know, this is back when nobody was taking photos of their food. So, of course, when I ate with anybody, that's the first thing they wanted to talk about was like, why are you photographing your lunch? And it would always, I'd always end up getting into a conversation with someone, and usually they were people in the entertainment business, but they were also just like anyone, doctors and lawyers and teachers and chefs and people in the food industry. And the more I talked to people about my struggle with food, the more I realized everyone has issues with food. There's nobody who's immune to this. And even people who are the quote unquote experts have become experts because they too struggle with food and wanting to have a new relationship with it. And so the second I realized that, it just took a lot of pressure off to try to have this perfect diet. This is also the reason why like I'm really conscious about never saying that a food is clean or good for you or bad for you or junk or any of those terms. It just, it's not only, I think, triggering, but I don't think it's helpful. So because of that, and I, because I could just see food not as the enemy anymore, my eating disorder specialist always told me like, one day you'll see your eating disorder, like will still be there, but just won't have power over you. And she was absolutely right. Like that's sort of what food became. Like, yeah, I still need it. Yeah. Like sometimes it pisses me off. Yeah. Sometimes I don't like that I've gained weight or lost it either, but like it doesn't have power over me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And how did you then transition to writing and directing? I mean, and producing. I mean, especially with your current film, you wear every hat imaginable.
Yeah, that happened. So this movie kind of, I wouldn't say it fell into my lap because I feel like I willed it into existence. But before, you know, I've been in the industry for a really long time, and people had always said to me, you know, you should write, you should produce, you should direct. And I was always of the feeling of no, because I've been doing this for so long and I struggled for so long that I have zero interest in starting from the bottom again. And I love acting so much. I just didn't see any point in getting behind the camera when acting roles were coming my way, and I loved it. But this movie came about because it's the third in a trilogy. So the first two movies were written and directed by Dave Boyle. And they were these like buddy road trip movies that were centered around this guy named Go Nakamura, who's a musician who plays a version of himself. And they were like comedies, but they were dude movies. And I was the love interest in these two movies, or one of the love interests in the second movie, where there was a love triangle. So there were these three women in this movie, but we didn't know much about them. They just sort of flitted in and out, and they always said these cool things, and then they disappear, as many women in movies centered around men tend to do. And the first two movies went to South by Southwest in 2011 and 2012. And Dave Boyle always said that it was going to be a trilogy, that it was going to be the lowest budget trilogy ever made. And a few years ago, he and I went hiking, and I had Marie Kondo'd my entire DVD collection and came across the first DVD, and it said the trilogy begins, and then the second one said the trilogy continues. So I just asked him casually, like, I'm not doing anything. You want to finish that trilogy? And he said no. And I just immediately, like, I was so upset because I wanted a job, but because I wanted to find out what happened. He sort of left each movie with a cliffhanger ending, and I just felt like that wasn't fair. I wanted to know what happened to these characters, and I was always a fan of these characters in these movies. So I don't know why I said it, but something within me called me to say, what if I make it happen? What if I do this? And he said to me, I will help you make it happen if you want to do it, and it's yours. And I just saw that as an opportunity, and I just leapt forward. You know, like, I feel like because I've had a blog and because I had a podcast, I knew that a lot of it requires just doing it yourself, just saying you're going to do it and then actually doing it instead of waiting. So I wrote that script the next day, actually, on a plane ride to Thanksgiving with Abe's family to Boston. And I wrote half the script there, and I wrote the rest of the script while I was in Boston for Thanksgiving. And then I finished the first draft on the plane ride back, and I sent it to him, and he said, this is great. Let's keep working on it. And, you know, we were looking for investors, but again, I was like, I want to just do this. And I want to, like, not have to ask permission. I want to have control over this. I also felt like, you know, at the time I was about to turn 40, or I had just turned 40 actually. And I just knew that, like, Hollywood actors or actresses, especially in particular, especially women of color, like, you just get forgotten about. And I just kind of felt like this was a very unique opportunity that I couldn't let pass up. I felt like I needed to, like, really put my all into it, and not just put my all into it because I wanted to see it get made, but because, like, I wanted to, like, express myself for the first time truly and not have anyone sort of, I didn't want to feel like the pressure of, like, an investor or anything to have to answer to. So that's why I ended up producing it. And the reason I was in it was because I had been in the other two. And the reason I wrote it was because no one else was going to. And the reason I directed it was because nobody else, it wouldn't have made sense for anybody else to do it. So by that time, like, it just sort of, like, yeah, it just felt like it happened, and it happened really quickly. But even so, like, each step of the way, even though I really believed in my movie, it still was very clear that, like, a festival like South by Southwest probably wasn't going to accept a first-time filmmaker. And it still felt like very, very, very far away. And I was okay with that because I'm used to disappointment, and I'm used to, like, trying and not having things happen. But when we did get accepted, it was really, like, quite unbelievable for me. And it was a moment for me to realize I had to, like, stop my narrative of, like, nothing good ever happens to me. That, like, that I try so hard and, like I never get recognized. I realized like that wasn't true anymore. And so it's been really exciting, all of this. Like, we've been getting good reviews and people seem to like the movie. And so I hope that when it comes out in May, like, people do end up seeing it. But at the same time, like, I'm not really expecting anything. I don't know. I guess I don't know what to expect. And I've been in this industry long enough to, like, know what it feels like to be disappointed, even though you think your hope that you could have more. So that's why I'm just, like, I feel like the whole process of making this movie has been this experiment and just, like, putting out my best work and hoping that people relate to it.
Sounds like it also is a time of really channeling a lot of your own power and self-confidence and, like, and trust in yourself that you can do. I mean, was that an experience for you, or did you already have all that?
I feel like I in theory had that, but not in practice. And this movie was a real moment for me. Not only, I mean, the movie itself is about three women who are struggling with aging. So I should say that I took the three characters from the first two movies, and I'm telling the story from their perspective now. And because of that, I knew that, like, already I couldn't be compared that much to the first two movies, because it was solely my voice, and it was being told from a feminine perspective, and that my voice was unique, and that it was valid, and that that was enough. But, you know, a lot of making this movie, I feel like it was the story that I felt like I needed to hear, because it's also about getting older and remembering who you used to be, and, like, and letting that past go, but also, like, realizing that, like, I feel like a lot of us feel like there's an expiration date on our dreams, myself included. And this, which is probably why, like, as I was in my 40s, like, feeling like I got to do this now, you know, while my back is still good, while my mind is still clear, while I still have, like, you know, people, like, who think I have some validity to me, because I'm not, like, an old person yet. And, you know, because this industry is so, like, youth obsessed, it was almost like a way for me to do that, but also kind of to prove not only to myself, but like kind of to others, that like it isn't too late. And that was a huge reason why, like, I felt like I needed to do it, not because I had the confidence in it, but almost like I just had to try, because if I wasn't going to try now, I knew I never would. And, you know, going back to the whole infertility thing, like a lot of this movie, I think one of the things that really helped me, me and Abe get over, the fact that we were never going to become parents was like, okay, well, that's not our reality, but what is our reality? Our reality is that we have a lot of freedom, and I'm not going to sit back and take advantage of that freedom, even though like I really want to just be at home all the time, like I am right now. But like we wanted to take advantage of, you know, being able to travel, and making this movie was a huge part of that too, was like, I don't think, you know, if I had a college fund to be saving up for, that I'd be putting all this money and time and energy into something that was so unknown.
Can we kind of switch gears and ask you about your skincare routine?
Yes, absolutely. Oh my God, I'm so excited. So I have to say, I had acquired up until 2 weeks ago quite a skincare routine. I mean, everything, and everything I've learned, I owe to you.
Wow. Oh, really? No.
Everything. Yes. What? Everything. Everything I've learned about serums, I've learned from you. I was masking. I was gua shaing. I had my micellar going. When I went to France, I went to the pharmacies. all of these things is because of the Forever 35 podcast. And I was loving it. I was getting facials on the reg. Like, it was really great. I had incorporated retinols into my wow. regime. I was feeling pretty good. And I was really enjoying the 10 steps that I had in the morning and the 10 steps I had at night. It was very soothing, and I absolutely loved it. However, I will say, 2 weeks ago, I started breaking out on my chin out of nowhere. I had no idea what it was. Of course, I couldn't, like, go see a doctor, so I did a self-diagnosis. Not a good idea. I was like, oh, I have fungal acne. Went and got dandruff shampoo. Put it on my face.
Lynn. Oh, that, no, Lynn.
That was not good, because I don't think I have fungal acne.
Oh, no.
Anyway, oh my long gosh. Story I am, short.
I am loving this. Okay. Keep going.
I think I have what's called perorial dermatitis. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. It just shows up around your mouth, comes up with stress. Sometimes it comes up because you've been using an inhaler a lot, and which I have, because I've been freaking out about the coronavirus and like the state of my lungs. So, because I'm asthmatic. So, I started breaking around my mouth. So what I ended up doing, and what I read the treatment was basically to do nothing. Like, the less you can do, the better. And to use a little bit of salicylic acid. So my regime went from 10 steps down to splashing my face with water during the day and putting on, like, I used like first aid beauty cream, which is like for eczema, which I had been smearing on my body, by the way, but I couldn't find anything else that was like free of everything, because I was using so many oils, which apparently isn't good for this. So I use like my body cream on my face. And then at night I was washing my face with honey, which I have a friend named Lily Diamond, who's, she's a food blogger, but she's also a natural wellness, blogger. Her mom used to, she used to be like a natural beauty expert in Hawaii. So she had written a lot of articles that went viral about washing your face with just honey. because it's antibacterial and it balances your pH. So I started to do that. And within a week, everything cleared up. And now I'm frightened. I'm like, I have so many products that I just want to like go back and touch, but I'm frightened. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I mean, my understanding was that chin acne is generally hormonal. I know it is for me.
It also spread, like it was like chin and then like spread to the up, like the upper lip. It mooned around. That's when I freaked out. Like at first I was like, whatever, I can handle a red chin. But the second it started like going into the mustache area, I was like, no, this looks like a bad like waxing experiment and I cannot have this. Even if I'm only doing Zoom meetings.
Are you wearing any makeup right now, or is that all, are you also abstaining?
I am anything? Abstaining from makeup, but I did have 3 auditions this week and a meeting that I had to put makeup on for, and I just avoided that area because it's bumpy and I just like didn't feel like it was worth it. But you can see it like looks like I ate a popsicle or something, and like if you look you can see like there's something going on over there. I told Abe to like tape it from like far back. I was like no close-ups, just go back.
Oh gosh.
And maybe this is the answer. Maybe your skincare routine is not a lot of skincare. And maybe that's going to be it for now.
Yeah. I mean, definitely for now. But oh, man, I miss it. I love the process of like each step, because what it was the main thing it was doing for me was it was marking the beginning of the day and marking the end of the day. It's like when you've done 10 steps in the morning, you are not going to crawl back into bed. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
You're going to like go into the kitchen and start making breakfast because you're on your way.
Yeah.
I have crawled right back into bed after my 2 steps almost every single day. I'm like, that wasn't so hard. Let's just get back into bed. But that was also like the end of the day, you know, like when you're removing, because usually I'd be wearing makeup during the day. Once I've done like the entire step, like, that's it. Like, we're done. We're staying in. It's bedtime. It's cozy time. Yeah. And it really felt like, you know, like it felt great, because like you need that, like this is what I'm missing so much right now. You need that marking of the beginning and the end of the day.
What was your, like, if you were going to recommend or rave about a product pre this breakout, what would be your pick?
I mean, I love Supergoop. I feel like their sunscreens just have a cool consistency to them. And I love that there's so many different types of them. I like their serum. I like the Unseen sunscreen. I like their Buckhorn hand cream. I like the like mist that you can use after you've put on all your makeup to set it. I like the powder that you can put on top of everything. I like the eye makeup. All of this. I haven't worn any sunscreen though, because I only go out for 2 walks and I don't want to break out. But I do like Supergoop a lot.
I feel like Supergoop, I mean, I love Supergoop too, and I feel like it comes up all the time. So many, it's such a fave.
Well, it feels good, because like sunscreen, that's the problem with a lot of sunscreens, is you put it on and it just feels tacky or sticky, or it doesn't feel nice going on.
Yeah.
Like, even like with the Unseen sunscreen, like it's like a primer. It just feels cool when you're spreading it on. And when you have it on, lying on your skin, it does not feel like, you know, it doesn't feel like you want to wash it off immediately.
Right. Totally. Well, Lynn, it has been such a pleasure to chat with you. I feel like we could talk for another 2 hours. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we're so excited for your movie. And can you tell our listeners where they can find you and where they'll be able to watch I Will Make You Mine?
Yes. So you can find me at lynnchen.com. I have all the links to social media. I'm very active on social media. And then I Will Make You Mine.com is where you can pre-order the movie. It comes out May 26th everywhere. that you would stream a movie, but you can pre-order it now on Apple TV or iTunes. And if you pre-order it, because I have all of these postcards that I was going to bring with me to South by Southwest that will no longer be used, I'm going to mail postcards. So if you,
that's so cool.
If you do that and you live in the US, I will send you a postcard. And amazing. It's a cute little postcard. I would want it.
I want it.
Sold.
So I'm going to pre-order your movie.
Awesome.
Even though I've already watched it. Well, thanks again, Lynn.
And yeah, Lynn, thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies.
All right. Well, Lynn is truly an inspiration.
Yeah. I mean, we're very lucky that we've gotten to know her in real life.
Yes.
And I have been really just in awe watching her work on this film and really take a creative risk, because it's not a risk, but like really like challenge herself mm-hmm. and do something that like I often get scared away by my creative dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk myself out of them, and I feel like she just like faced her goals and went for it, and her film is beautiful.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
She's amazing. I'm really glad we got the chance to have her on the show. And she listens to the pod, which is really fun.
She does.
It's always fun to like get to chat to someone who like also has heard us be very weird on here.
Yeah.
To totally. Like know what they're getting into.
Totally.
So for intentions this week, Dory, we were both curating our news intake.
Mm-hmm.
How did that go for you?
So it's going better, I would say. Not looking at my iPad first thing in the morning has really helped. Like really helped. And I will periodically look throughout the day, but I think just like starting my day without doing that makes such a difference to me. So I'm feeling good about it. I haven't placed any further restrictions on myself, because that seems to have solved the biggest problem for me, which was kind of like feeling like my day had just gotten off to like an icky start.
Yeah.
How about you?
That's really great.
Thank you.
I have been making an effort to get my news from like my online newspapers that I have access to,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to what I was doing, which was going on to our Forever 35 Twitter account and then looking at the trending topics and then like panic clicking on things and just getting like worked up and reading a lot of like hot takes in every direction and just getting like kind of spiraling. And I find like when I just like check my news sources, or I'll check even the news tab on my iPhone, it's just more like, well, this is what's happening. And then I'll check it again in like 3 hours and it's like, hey, this is still what's happening. Where I feel like if you access the news via something like Twitter, it makes you feel like the news is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
When like actually it's just a million different people weighing in with like opinions in under 200 words. So that has been good. And I need to keep working on it, especially because it correlates with my sleeping issues, I think. So it feels like a work in progress, but I did really feel like every time I read the news, I did so in a more thoughtful manner this week, which was just kind of interesting to like observe myself.
Mm-hmm.
So
good.
I'm working on it. I felt pretty good about it.
What do you have going on this week?
Okay, well, I don't know if this is going to be attainable, but this week I would like to figure out how to get some actual alone time, like mm-hmm. alone. I don't know if that means like driving my car to a parking lot and just like sitting there for an mm-hmm. hour. I don't know if that means like making everyone leave my house to walk the dog and I just like lay on the floor. I just need some physical space. And I feel kind of like a asshole saying that, because obviously I love my family and my husband and even my little dog. But there is just like, I also really crave, I don't think I realized how much I needed solitude. True solitude before. And that has been, you know, being in our house for the past over 2 months together.
Kate, it's okay to want alone time.
Thank you. I agree. It just has been, you know, I've just been kind of like working through my, like, how do I express it to my family? Because normally when it comes out, I'm like, just leave me alone. Stop touching me. And like, I think it would be better to be like, hey, everybody, I'm going to go, like, I need to just take a minute to myself to like read quietly and sit with my thoughts. I'll be back in an hour.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just figure out how to get it, because it's very hard to get it in a global pandemic when we're supposed to shelter at home.
Yes, totally. Well, I hope you can find some.
Thank you. How are you intentioning this week?
I referenced this earlier in the show when you were talking about how having a clean bedroom is helpful for sleep. I need to clean my bedroom. It's been a disaster pretty much since we moved in, because it's pretty much the only room that's like not fully unpacked.
Are there still boxes?
There's a box in the room. There is one box. There's like piles of stuff. My husband's clothes are always everywhere. Like, it's just a mess. It's just a mess. And like, I hate it. I feel like it doesn't make my bedroom a comforting, happy place that I want it to be. And I need that to change. So my intention this week is to clean my bedroom.
I'm going to also try to do this.
Great.
I'm going to double it up.
Great.
Double it up.
You can do that.
Because mine is a mess. And I agree. Like, it really makes me feel more calm when it is clean.
Totally.
Well, Dory.
Yes, Kate.
It's a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
It truly is, though. It really is. It's fun to talk about this stuff with you.
Yeah, same. Butt masks never 35 forever.
Yeah, although, like, what if I try another butt mask?
I mean, we might be going to butt mask sometimes.
Butt mask sometimes. 35 forever.
Doesn't have quite the same ring to it, but...
No, it feels very wishy-washy.
We can workshop it.
Okay, yeah, like, butt masks. All right. Well, we're working on it, everybody. Yep. 'Tis a work in progress.
Like ourselves.
Until then. That's true. You know what? Like ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do want to mention that this show, Forever 35, is hosted and produced by you, Doria Shafrir, and me, Kate Spencer. And it is produced and edited by Sammy Junio. And Sam Reed is our project manager. And we are so grateful to have you listening. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.